Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight, myself and Jay will go over the weekend's 1-0 defeat to Aberdeen. We'll look ahead to the weekend's game against St Johnstone, discuss the latest movements in terms of our search for a manager. We'll have a wee bit about the Welsh Society, and then later on in the podcast, Motherwell Makes Music Festival, what we call him, Creator, will that do? Derek Watson, he'll join us for a wee bit on the festival and a bit of Motherwell related chat as well, I'm sure. Jay, how's it going?
Aye, not too bad, yourself?
Yeah, not too bad, mate, not too bad. Well, a 1-0 defeat at the weekend, obviously disappointing to lose any game, but I think given the circumstances of the last defeat at Aberdeen, losing a goal in the 92nd minute, there was a wee bit of chat that it was perhaps just as sore, just because we had held on so valiantly for the best part of the game. But I think if we're to be realistic, it was an improved performance and possibly an improved result in the end as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those ones that you can kind of look at both ways. Last week when we did the podcast, I remember saying that, you know, having lost 7-2 up there, just to go there and I would take a defeat, essentially, but it would be the manner of the defeat. I would have taken a narrow defeat to against a side who are by far the second best team in the division. But of course, when you get to that stage in the game at 0-0, and you're looking good for what would have been a really big point for us, to lose a goal that late on and to lose the game that late on, it doesn't matter who you're playing, doesn't matter where you're playing, it could be Celtic at Celtic Park or you could be at home to, you know, whoever. It's a kick in the teeth regardless of what your feelings were going into the game to begin with. But I think overall, if you take it, you know, in the context of the season we've had, and you consider in particular, you know, that 7-2 defeat the last time we were at Pittodrie, then you've got to accept that it was a far, far improved result. And I think, you know, in the context of everything that's went on as well recently, with, you know, obviously the manager leaving, Robinson now in charge, a lot of uncertainty and instability of what's coming next. I think it's, yes, it's disappointing, it's a kick in the teeth, but I think that we need to be optimistic about it and try and stay optimistic and positive, you know, getting into Saturday's game.
Yeah, that's it. There's obviously injury concerns going into the game as well, which afforded guys like David Ferguson a rare start. And these guys, well, you would hope at least take something from 90 minutes against what is the second best team in the league. The league table shows that. The performances that they've produced against us in the games I've seen them certainly suggest that they're the second best team in the league. So I guess that kind of experience and that taster for the first team, that will not do any of these guys any harm, and hopefully will whet their appetite for more opportunities and give Stephen Robinson or whoever is going to be the manager going forward a wee bit of a selection dilemma, because I think we've talked about it before, the issues with a few of the guys, perhaps their place has never been under scrutiny or they've not had enough competition. So injuries, yes, it's not a nice thing to be suffering from, particularly when you've not got the biggest of squads, but if there is guys on the sidelines, young guys that are hungry and ready to perhaps make a push, then hopefully we can benefit from it.
No, yeah, totally. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're going to a place like Pittodrie or you're playing at home to Dundee and you're conceding, you know, the number of goals we're conceding, if you're then out injured or suspended and one of the younger guys comes in and plays in a team that manages to shut out a team like Aberdeen for as long as we did, then that's got to be a positive. Of course, the one concern when you lose a goal so late on is that, particularly with the more inexperienced players, that their heads might go down a little bit and they might take it a bit to heart. And particularly this season, because we've seen, you know, a questionable mentality at times. Particularly in those games we've mentioned, you know, the 5-1 to Dundee and the other games that we've lost heavily. The mentality has been questionable, and I think it's important that you need to try and stay positive during this week. And you're kind of looking at your experienced players to make sure that somebody like Ferguson, you know, looks at the positives of the game and, as I said, looks at the game in context. Because losing that late goal, you know, losing that late a goal to lose the game when it looked as though a point had been secured. It is enough to knock MD's confidence. It is enough to make MD feel negative about it, whether you are a, you know, a staunch 30 years football fan, or you are one of the, you know, younger guys just kind of starting out your fledging steps into your career. I think that you need to accept that it is a hard one to take, but it's important that we stay, you know, positive, because we are still in a relegation zone. We are still a pretty poor side this season, and there are sides better than us that will go to Aberdeen and get a hammering. So as long as we stay positive, then there's no reason not to, you know, be confident in these last few games before the split.
Yeah, that's a good point, and it's something that kind of did get my back up a bit. The guys at the Aberdeen podcast have been on here, and we've been on their podcast a few times. I heard Tommy Doherty talking about it after the game, the Aberdeen assistant. One team tried to win the game, another team tried to spoil. Yes, it's not nice to see your own team time wasting. Yes, it's not nice to see negative tactics. But when there was a period of less than 3 weeks between us losing 7-2 at Pittodrie and then going there with a makeshift side, I don't think we should have to present any excuses to Aberdeen Football Club, a team that rightfully believe they're the second force right now, for going there and trying to defend and trying to hold on to what we had. Yes, it didn't work, and yes, they've got every right to gloat. They seem to have really taken a lot of satisfaction in it, clearly, because we've hurt them quite a few times in the recent past. But it just really confused me how, like, kind of smug, and how they, instead of actually celebrating their victory, they decided they would take random pot shots at Motherwell. Even Doherty, the first line of his post-match interview in Sports Scene last night was that the Motherwell tried to spoil the game. And by spoiling the game, I assume that he means there was a wee bit of time wasting and that we prevented them from scoring. So Tommy Doherty obviously loves goals and his team winning, quite understandable, I suppose. But at the same time, we spoiled the game in the sense that they couldn't break us down and they hadn't scored. So it seems almost like sour grapes from them, despite the fact they won the game, which, I don't know. So
no, I mean, I saw some of the tweets that you're talking about as well. Obviously, and it's strange behaviour. You know, it's the kind of behaviour that we've come accustomed to from Rangers and Celtic in particular. And maybe it's just that kind of sense of entitlement or something. I don't really get it, because it's certainly not something that I remember any Motherwell fans doing when we were, you know, up in second place. I don't remember, you know, if a team like Inverness or whoever came to Firth Park and trying to grind out a 0-0. I don't really remember Motherwell fans reacting with that kind of sense of entitlement. But, you know, Aberdeen will have in the past have done, you know, just like the rest of the Diddy clubs will have went to a place like Celtic Park and defended for their lives for 90 minutes in the hope of grinding out a draw. So it was quite...
did it to a... 2 or 3 months ago, in fact, possibly not even as long as ago as that, when they were in the game.
Yeah, so if they believe that they're the second force and they see themselves as now, you know, the one of the big two, then I don't understand why they wouldn't, you know, understand that a team like ourselves, as you said, having conceded 7 last time, would turn up and do that. You know, it was the kind of tweets that you would expect to see from certain other clubs, supporters rather than Aberdeen, which is quite disappointing, because, you know, there's always a good bit of banter, horrible word, but there's always a good bit of football banter with the likes of ourselves and that podcast, and just basically fans of any other club that isn't, you know, the Old Firm. But of course, you know, obviously they've been yearning for the glory that they believe they're due, because they were a big club once in the 80s, and so it just seems as though, you know, they're enjoying that moment at the, you know, and everything that goes with it, like this sort of bizarre, smug gloating, when, let's be honest, the rest is when they've just been out celebrating the fact we'd scored the last-minute winner. But, you know, each to their own. As I said before, it's certainly not something that got particularly under my skin, because getting into the game, I would have been pleased with a narrow defeat based on what happened last time, and I still am, regardless of, you know, what the Aberdeen podcast or Tommy Doherty's got to say.
Well, I suppose the talking point for the remainder of the week until we go up against St Johnstone on Saturday will be who the replacement will be. Mark McGee's successor yet to be appointed. The rumour mill continues to go. We don't really have too much to go on either. The the bookies' odds seem to sway wildly on the basis of £5 or £10 being bet. It doesn't seem to be that anyone's particularly in the know. A few of the newspapers picked up on today that Stephen Presley had been approached for the job. That was one that had completely flew under the radar if it indeed happened. I can't say I'm too disappointed that Stephen Presley apparently said no. Stephen Robinson, now the bookie's favourite at 1-6. That's in from 5-6 last night. So, again, has there been a wee bit of money placed? Does someone know anything? It's hard to know, because I suppose we're at the situation, JP, where we can't really say much more than we said last week, because nothing particularly has happened since then.
Well, that's it. It does just seem to be really, really quiet. And again, you know, you're completely right. Because it's the Motherwell manager we're talking about, it's not a massive market. So it just takes, you know, someone to hear a rumour, tell a couple of their mates, they all stick £20 on it, and suddenly Robinson's favourite. It's really hard to judge, you know, whether that movement is based on anything concrete or anything. The Stephen Presley one, I've no idea where that's came from, whether it's true or not. You know, we live in an age where I don't want to use the term fake news because Donald Trump's a fucking idiot, but it's accurate in that there is every chance that the story is complete nonsense. I mean, for all we know, it could be actually Stephen Presley or his agent is just making people aware that, you know, he still exists by pouncing on a chance to pretend that he was somehow approached. I mean, there's not really any way we could really deny that or anything. You know, he can say what he wants and the Sun will run with it. But I decided long ago that anything the Sun prints is probably bullshit. So I don't really tend to pay much attention to it. He's certainly not a name I would have liked in the first place. He's certainly not someone that I think has the track record or the CV to really suggest that we should be, you know, tracking him down and sounding him out in particular. I know we did it with the last appointment with Mark McGee, but of course, you know, it was reasonably successful last time at Far Park. We knew what we were getting. He had relationships with those at the club. But the Presley one, I just don't see why. You know, if you were going to go out your way to go and, you know, tap up or you know, approach a few managers about your vacant job, I don't think Presley would be on MD's list. Whether it was, you know, a list of maybe 30 to 40 Scottish managers that we decided to put a call round just to let them know that there's a vacancy, I suppose that's possible. But I struggle to believe that he was, you know, headhunted. Perhaps the truth somewhere is in between, you know, that he was basically just alerted to the fact the job was available, you know, along with a long list of other managers. I'm really not sure, but I would be quite disappointed if that was the calibre of the manager that we were actually headhunting, because I don't see any reason to kind of, you know, target Stephen Presley. I know that he's had difficult circumstances with Coventry. I mean, I don't even, where has he been anywhere since Coventry? I couldn't even tell you what Stephen Presley does these days.
Not that I'm aware of. When you actually said that perhaps it was a reminder that he still existed, that's exactly how it served for me, because I had completely forgotten that Stephen Presley was ever a manager.
that's the thing. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to spend too long talking about something that probably is a nonsense story. I find it hard to believe that we've targeted him. It may be, I don't really know how clubs operate when it comes to, you know, a vacancy, because obviously you're not really going to, you know, Universal Jobs Match on the Job Centre website and putting up an advert or going to S1 Jobs. I mean, I don't know how, I mean, is there a, you know, is it like Football Manager where you click jobs and suddenly all the available ones come up, or do you actually need to go and notify people who might be interested? I don't know whether someone would be given a task one morning after McGee was sacked, you know, with here's a list of, you know, 50 to 60 managers who might be interested, go and tell them the job's up for grabs. I mean, there's every chance that might have been the case and Presley's decided to go to the press with it. But I get the impression that it is more a case of, you know, look at me, I still exist, because I don't really believe he's the kind of manager we would have been headhunting. Maybe if he had applied for it and we wanted to give him an interview and just see how he performed at that, then I could maybe get on board with that. But I just don't see any reason to believe that we're headhunting Stephen Presley.
Yeah, I suppose another one that we discussed at the weekend was Alec Neil, who was sacked in his role as manager of Norwich just before the weekend there. Again, it's one that I would like to see someone at the club, even putting a phone call into Alec Neil and saying, listen, would you like to discuss this position? Would it be something that interested you? I think it is a massive shot in the dark, given even as much of the fact that he's just out a job where he didn't do too badly, his reputation still very much intact. It tends to be that the managers that have left Scotland to go down south, they only really return here if they've had a few kind of bad hits to their reputation. I don't think Neil has particularly suffered in that sense. So again, it would be a long shot, but maybe something worth pursuing. But as we say, we don't really know very much more than we did at this stage last week. I don't think either you or myself, I'll not speak for you, in sense of have really changed our opinion on who you would like to see as manager, because basically there hasn't really been anything to go on. So we don't, the longer time passes, it's just getting more frustrating rather than anything else. I would just like to see it brought to conclusion and we can go into what is a massive end to the season with our focus only on the Saturday at 3 o'clock or the couple of midweek games that we've got. Because 2 weeks is possibly about the normal time, but then after that it does feel like it's dragging for me anyway.
No, I mean, I get that. I mean, I think we had when we actually first started the podcast, you know, I think it was the day that McCall, or the day after McCall left, and I remember having this kind of conversation just about every week, you know, about how long it was taking and things like that. I mean, it's natural, because when you're a Motherwell fan, these are amongst the most exciting announcements that will come from your club. You know, who is the next manager going to be? It's a really exciting time. It's a really interesting time. We all have our opinions. We all, you know, how we will respond to certain names and how we will respond to, you know, whether it's someone we want to see as manager, whether it's someone we don't fancy as manager. We're all kind of waiting for that big announcement. And of course, the longer it goes on, the more agitated, the more frustrating it becomes. That said, we are in a position where it needs to be the right one. And so, 2 weeks, I'm happy with that. I think the concern for me is that, you know, if it drags on, I know we mentioned Robinson earlier being, you know, the far and away favourite now, and as we've already said, that could be just purely down to the way the betting has been over the last couple of days. My concern is that we might, you know, decide after going through the recruitment process that, well, we should just give Robinson that to the end of the season and maybe look then. I think that would be a mistake, because if that's the conclusion you draw now, that should essentially have been the conclusion you should have drawn, you know, the day after Mark McGee left. And there's no point in injecting more uncertainty and more instability into the situation for 2 or 3 weeks only to reach a conclusion that you could easily have reached at the start. As well as, you know, the fans being keen to know who the manager is, it does, you know, generally bring that kind of unsettling effect, and it doesn't do MD any favours. So if we are to give it to Robinson, I'm saying to the end of the season, because I know that's when his contract's up, and I would be surprised if we actually did give it to him long term. I would like to have seen that done sooner rather than later, rather than being in a position that, you know, you're kind of going through all this for essentially nothing. If it transpires that, you know, Robinson wasn't the prime choice for the job, but absolutely excels at the interview stage and is offered a 3-year deal as manager, then that's different. I can get on board with that. But, you know, just the silence. I think the silence always makes you think that the status quo might be the more likely of the options. And if it is to be Robinson just until the end of the season, I think that we've injected more instability that there really needed to be.
Yeah, I suppose the other risk is that you've got people applying. And should it be the case that Robinson takes it to the end of the season with a view to then restructuring the managerial structure there, does it mean that some of these guys have applied in March are put off applying 3 months later? Because if they weren't good enough 3 months ago, why are they going to be good enough then? It's just, I think it's a bit of a risky one to try and form a shortlist and then go for the most likely option. I don't know. I'm just not comfortable with the idea of making a temporary appointment, like wasting 2 and a bit weeks, and then saying, "Well, what we've actually decided to do is we're going to see how it goes for 3 months." It just seems like a bit of a cop out. I would like to see someone come in and be secure in that job. Doesn't matter what happens this season. There's only, 8-9 games left of the season. We've got to be a situation now where we're a stable club, where we've got a stable manager, and the manager's given time to work in his own regime, his own strategies, and take the club in the direction that he wants it to go. Because we're chopping and changing. Well, how many managers have we had since we started the podcast? There's possibly been with temporary managers 4 or 5 in the 2.5 years that we've done the podcast. That's madness. We've got to stabilise. We've got to stop the short-termness and the short-term approach. And maybe that actually also has to transfer over to the fans as well. We need to stop thinking after a couple of bad results that it's time to make wholesale sweeping changes, because it does not work. The progress of the club over the last couple of years shows on the part that it does not work to constantly chop and change in terms of your manager. So I'm very against, if Robinson gets a job, I would like to see Robinson given the job on a permanent basis, and he works through to the end of the season, whether he keeps us up or not, and then the hard work begins in the summer where he has to either rebuild. I think it's almost a given, regardless of whether Robinson keeps us up or we are relegated, that it would be the case that Robinson would still have to massively restructure the squad, because there's certain members of the squad that are ageing, there's guys that are out of contract. There will be a rebuilding job there for him to do, regardless of what league we're in. So that'll be a huge test of his pedigree, should it be Robinson or any other manager that gets the job. But it has to be a long-term appointment for me. No point of doing this over a three-month period.
No, I completely agree. Obviously, you know, all this conversation is hypothetical, but then that's what comes of, you know, the silence that surrounded the last week or so. I completely agree. I think that there's a few factors. You're absolutely spot on. You're not just talking about, you know, our own players being out of contract. You're talking about potential targets from other teams, who at this stage you could be looking at as, you know, pre-contract agreements and things like that. And the minute that you decide that you're not going to take the plunge into a long-term manager and instead just keep Robinson until the end of the season, you essentially, you know, ruin any possibility you have of getting in first on some of these targets. You might have a manager who might come in and might identify some areas and you know a couple of guys who are out of contract and be in a position to get them in within a week of taking over the Motherwell job, and instead you're in a situation where you can't really sign MD, and if you do, they might not be in the whoever the new manager's plans are. So I agree, you're in a situation now, particularly with Bosmans and pre-contracts and things like that, that it doesn't really do MD any favours to kind of go through the process we've went through and still stick to the short term. I think if we had, as I said before, if we just decided, right, look, we're in a relegation battle, we need stability, Robinson can see it out, then I could at least have understood that. You could even then have started the recruitment process at that stage and just take your time, invite, you know, potential candidates to come along, watch the games, you know, get their applications in, and then go through the interviews in the summer. But the less you hear, the more you start to think that maybe we are just going to go with the status quo, and I think it does. It has a lot of negatives. And another negative that we have, and I suppose you could apply this negative to whoever it is that you bring in as manager. I mean, Motherwell fans have always had a reputation, at least in my opinion, and from things you've read and heard from the likes of Duncan Shearer and stuff, there's always been that reputation of being quite fickle and getting on the backs of our own players at times. But and something I don't think that's really kind of mentioned as much as it should be, in the last 6 or 7 years, Motherwell fans have probably had a decent, you know, a decent reputation when it comes to supporting the team, and because of the Motherwell boys in particular. You look at a lot of the songs that are now sung by the likes of Hearts and St Johnson, even Rangers, and even the groups that have popped up at these clubs. It's almost in direct response to what the Motherwell boys were doing, you know, seven years ago or so. And there was that really, really great connection between the fans and the players. You had, you know, at times at the end of a season, you would have the players doing the lap of honour and then spending a good 20 minutes down that far end of the East Stand. There was a real rapport and a connection, you know, with all, and that translates into all aspects of your club. It's not just the atmosphere on the Saturday, you know, talking about the Welsh Society and things like that. When you've got that feel-good factor and that kind of connection between fans and clubs, it kind of permeates all over the club, and you know, it's enjoyable, and it's a fantastic thing to see. And that's been completely lost basically since Mark McGee came in, but in particular this season, and we obviously saw the culmination of that at the Dundee game. And that's something that when we spoke, I think in the first podcast after Mark McGee had been given the job, I made the point that if it had been given to somebody like Seymour Vallecari, he would have been given a lot more time than somebody like Mark McGee, because the ill feeling was there, the bad feelings towards him were there. And if he'd had a spell that things weren't going his well, going his way, the fans would turn on him a lot quicker than they would with someone else. And that's, you know, unfortunate for Mark McGee, but that's football. And you're now in a position, and I'm not suggesting that, you know, it's not a, you know, a party political broadcast for somebody like Seymour Vallecari or anything like that. I think that you are, these kind of things need to be considered a wee bit more. I'm not talking about fan power. I'm not suggesting that the Motherwell boys or Motherwell fans in general should get a say on who they think would be the better manager just based on who their most popular personality is. But the Mark McGee kind of saga, or the year that Mark McGee was manager, kind of showed us that it does have a massive effect. And we're in a situation at the moment where if we made a positive appointment and went into these last couple of games with that kind of excitement and that engagement and that interest that's generated by a positive appointment, that can translate into the stands and get a couple of more people across into Fir Park, a better atmosphere. The atmosphere can encourage the players, particularly younger ones. And, you know, we can start to all work together again like we did under McCall when you had that fantastic connection. And I just think that the idea of keeping Robinson on for, you know, to the summer, it's just it's underwhelming. You know, a lot of people will have responded to the Mark McGee leaving as, you know, a chance to maybe recapture that excitement and that engagement with the club again. And I think by just going down the easy sort of underwhelming status quo, I think kind of loses a little bit of that. Now, that's not an argument that we should rush into an appointment because, you know, a group of Motherwell fans might, you know, like it or dislike it, but I do think that there's an opportunity that's lost that perhaps wouldn't have been if this decision had been made at the start. If we just went, right, Mark McGee's went, Robinson's going to stay in charge until the summer, let's all get behind the team, let's avoid relegation, and then in the summer we'll start the recruitment process, then I think that immediately gets everybody on board. But to kind of tantalise people with the sort of the carrot and the stick of, you know, Mark McGee's went and now we're going to bring someone else in, you know, we've had X amount of applications, we're going to be doing interviews in this week, and then either by the Aberdeen game or just after, we'll have this exciting new long-term manager in. I think if you then don't go ahead with that and you just stick with your, you know, your end-of-season assistant manager, well, not even assistant manager, I don't know how James McFadden's feeling, that he was just completely overlooked by a guy who was essentially just in the door regardless of where he was last season. You know, to just go with Robinson to the end of the season, I just think would be really, really underwhelming, because you don't even have that added caveat of wondering, you know, if we're going to start building for the new season, because you're not going to be signing guys in pre-contracts, you're not going to be looking really at players, because you're not going to have a manager to give the say-so.
Yeah, spot on for me. The game at the weekend, again, it's a difficult one because we're recording the Monday night here. By tomorrow, Wednesday, Thursday, whenever the new manager comes in, hopefully this week, this could all be pretty out of date. But, Jay, we'll focus on St Johnstone themselves, and it's basically the line that I give every time we play St Johnstone. But they've got a very good record at Fir Park in recent years. They've snuck the games by generally 2-1. But they're well organised. They've been fantastically successful under Tommy Wright, given that they've got a budget. possibly even a wee bit smaller than ours. They've got a support smaller than ours. I know the term punching above their weight is one that gets the backs up of most supporters of teams that are punching above their weight, but it's kind of a phrase coined for teams like St Johnstone, who constantly surprise, and quite often I think that you suspect that there'll be a season where their bubble bursts, but it never ever seems to do that. They're always, they've become a staple part of the top six, a very, very difficult team to beat on their day, and that's proven the fact that we haven't beaten St Johnstone in a couple of seasons at Fir Park.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've said like a good few times before, I think we're very complimentary when it comes to St Johnstone, because I think they're the model club where we're concerned. I think they are exactly the type of club that we should aspire to be, for the reasons that you've stated. You know, they, you know, in the grand scheme of things, they're very similar to ourselves in terms of fan base, in terms of size of club, in terms of budget, and yet they are continually doing the kind of things more, you know, consistently that we would aspire to. That's not to say that we haven't, you know, under McCallum in recent years, but yeah, St Johnstone are definitely the kind of club that we should aspire to, and they're a very good team. It's going to be a very, very difficult game. The game up at McDermott Park in particular stands out for me this season because they clocked on relatively early on. They were sort of in tune to the game enough to clock on very early on where our weaknesses were and tried to exploit them. And it just so happened that, you know, luck wasn't on their side, and they just on the day didn't take advantage of that. But their entire game plan changed the minute they realised that by putting balls into our box, we would just panic. So they're a very intelligent side as well. You know, they don't just go into the game with a game plan. They then modify that, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes into a game purely based on the weaknesses of the opponent. And that's something that we might really struggle with because, as we've seen quite a few times this season, we do have plenty of defensive weaknesses. And we need to be sensible to that. We need to maybe protect the defence a wee bit. But as we always say, we've got, you know, good enough attacking players to score goals and to punish teams. So it's a very difficult game. Obviously, slightly more optimistic, it's at Firth Park. And I think it's one of those ones, again, where it might just come down to how we respond to losing such a late goal at Pittodrie. If we view it as a harsh but still relatively positive 90 minutes, then fantastic. If the heads are down, if the confidence is taken a bashing by such a late kick in the teeth, then it could be a difficult game on Saturday.
Yeah, the one positive, of course, will be that Louis Moult will be back for the game following his one-match ban after picking up 6 yellow cards. There'll be doubts over Stephen Hamill, who went off. Just can't seem to get any sort of run of games, Hamill, unfortunately. He was taken off against Aberdeen, so defensive concerns certainly ahead of the game. Jill, we'll finish up before we get Derek on, just a wee bit about the society. You've only been to one board meeting, obviously, so it's very early days since you've been elected onto the board, but nice to see some correspondence in terms of questions being answered and being answered properly, put into the public domain. I was a wee bit kind of, I thought that the statement on the manager would have been a wee bit more forthcoming quicker, but it was more just to demonstrate the fact that the society do have a big say in matters. There's obviously two Welsh society members co-opted onto the club board. They now have a controlling stake in the club, so you kind of, I think that sometimes now people are waiting for the Welsh society to perhaps speak up and kind of show that they're the big show in town, so to speak. But certainly a step forward in the communication, a more open dialogue is something that we've been pining for in the podcast for quite some time now. You'll be delighted, obviously, that that's come about pretty quickly. And I'm sure that there certainly was. You didn't pull many punches when it came to informing them about how poor their communication had been in the past. But you can't really look backwards with that sort of thing. Going forwards, it's a good start.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's important to say that I would be lying if I wasn't getting into the sort of the whole idea of being a Welsh Society board member, expecting maybe a bit opposition, maybe a bit reluctance. I wasn't really sure what to expect, and I think that, you know, there is this kind of perception that there's maybe, you know, this idea that it's about self-interest and sort of protecting, you know, the club tie idea, the club tie and hospitality and things like that, and that very well might be the case. I can't really, you know, people will have, you know, there will be own personal opinions that aren't expressed and things like that, but in terms of, you know, the welcoming and the sort of positivity and the confidence I've taken from a very short spell on the Welsh Society board, I've got to say I'm optimistic, I'm enthusiastic. I think that there are a lot of problems in terms of communication. A lot of improvements need to be made in terms of transparency, in terms of accessibility, in terms of accountability, and all these kind of things. But I think I was maybe misguided in thinking that the problems there were as a result of, you know, any deliberate attempt to, I don't know, you know, install smoking and mirrors. I think it was more just whether it's, you know, stagnated a little bit, or whether it's just not being quite in tune with what's been said in social media and on Steelman Online and Pine Bovril and stuff like that. I'm really not sure, but certainly a lot of the comments I had to make and a lot of the ideas that I've expressed have been, you know, responded to positively. The things that we're now going to be doing, like the surgeries and trying to, you know, just if MD's not noticed, you know, or seen about it, you know, surgeries the same way they have in politics, where, you know, a certain day and time you can actually just go along and quiz board members or, you know, insult them, criticise them, whatever you want, and that will be now happening. But that was something that was in the pipeline before I was voted on. So it's certainly, you know, these changes were getting made before I was there. Obviously, it will be, I'll be more than happy to help those along. And I certainly have plenty of more ideas as well. You know, hopefully in the coming weeks or months, we'll be looking at social media Q&As and anything really that can just make it more accessible. Because as I said beforehand, it's not on that if you're a Welsh Society member, you don't know things. It's as simple as that. I mean, there are certain aspects that you just can't know because of confidentiality agreements and stuff like that. That's just par for the course in any business, and it's unfortunate that you will always have a small number of people who will be critical regardless. But there's so much more that people should be able to access in terms of information, in terms of communication, and fans need to be more engaged, and that's not happened yet. I'm optimistic now. I'm far more optimistic than I was beforehand. I'll still be very critical and moaning about them, particularly, well, I can't really say them now, moaning about us, particularly on the podcast, if it comes up. But no, I think it's time to be optimistic, and I wouldn't have put myself forward in the first place if I wasn't going to be enthusiastic and try and bring, you know, a different point of view. But I have to stress the fact that, you know, it hasn't been a case of going along and being critical and, you know, it falling on deaf ears. It's been productive. It's been constructive. Had good chat with, you know, some passionate Motherwell fans. And hopefully we can now get things in the right direction. Because I think it's a cycle. If you can get things in the right direction and improve things, you know, slowly and take a few small steps, then people react to that. They get more into it. And then it becomes easier to then implement further changes. And then it just becomes a, you know, a cycle like that. But you need to take those first steps to begin with, and I think we're maybe starting to do that now.
Yeah, I think it's also important to add, I've seen posts in Steelman Online and Twitter and Facebook from yourself, but I think it's quite a good thing to see, quite refreshing to see if people have got questions to direct them to yourself, and you might be able to clear up some of the stuff or perhaps even bring some of the ideas forward, which again is something for me as an outsider looking into the society, is something they need, people coming forward with ideas that can be taken forward and worked upon, or perhaps even getting involved with these ideas by themselves as well. So it's a kind of open book and an open dialogue is very, very healthy.
Well, that's that. I mean, you talk about, you know, volunteering and stuff like that. That's a big thing, because that's what the Welsh Society is. You know, apart from Craig Hughes, you know, there's no paid members of staff, and the Welsh Society board is obviously there, but to get things, anything really, happening, whether it's events, whether it's a presence, you do need people willing to offer time. But you can't expect people just to do that when they feel like donors. It's as simple as that. If someone thinks that the Welsh Society to them is simply a place that they file a tenner, a direct debit every month, without anything in return, without feeling a part of it, without feeling engaged, without even knowing what's going on, then there's not a chance in hell they're also going to donate their time. So again, that's what I mean about it all being a bit of a cycle. If you can make someone feel more engaged and more passionate about it, then they're more likely to then donate their time to help you out. And if they're donating their time to help you out, it becomes easier to implement the things you want to implement. And then, you know, it is, it's a cycle. But the ball is very much in the Welsh Society's court, because it's not been good enough, not in the slightest. But there will be positive changes. There will be improvements. It's just a question of you know, on what scale and, you know, the results that they bring. But, yeah, always open, whether it's through the podcast, Twitter, or my own or anything like that. Any ideas, any suggestions, more than happy to pass them on, because I think one of the society's biggest problems is the fact that they've just not been accessible. It's not that, I don't believe, from what I've kind of witnessed over the last month or two, I don't believe it's a genuine reluctance not to listen to people. I think it's just not really been particularly in touch with, you know, the viewpoints of the masses, and not really communicating things well enough. I mean, we have the newsletter. A good example, for example, you know, just to, if anybody's listening, and there's a board meeting next Tuesday night, and as a Welsh Society member, you are invited to put forward your questions to be answered at the board meeting, and then obviously, you know, the answer will be discussed at the board meeting and then released publicly. And you're also invited to set the agenda. So if there's something that you genuinely want discussed and you think it's important enough that the Welsh Society board should be sitting discussing it, you can email, you know, the agenda item, and that will be, you know, obviously time constraints and things like that come into it. But the plan is to then add that to the agenda. Now, these kind of things aren't widely known because they're put in the newsletter, but they're mentioned at the end. So you have the Welsh Society membership. A lot of people don't receive the email anymore because they've unsubscribed, you know, a year or two ago, and there's issues with that because you can't then add someone to it. So a lot of people can't re-add someone without their permission, and all these kind of issues and problems with admin. So you have a situation where not every Welsh Society member is receiving the email. Not all of them are reading it. And those that do may not even bother reading to the end. So you're putting something like that, which, yes, it's not the best thing in the world. It might not attract a lot of interest. I'm sure they're not Motherwell fans going home thinking, God, I really wish I could get the Welsh Society to talk about, you know, the price of Capri Suns in the East Stand next Tuesday. But you're giving people the option. You're giving people a chance there to set the agenda, and you're just not publicising it well enough. So a lot of what the Welsh Society is doing and is available to members, you know, the tools are there for members to express themselves and to get their questions answered and to get the points they want discussed. It's just not good enough in terms of getting that message out there. And that's the big thing. If you can start to do that, then, you know, everything after that. If you're transparent and you're communicating things on a regular basis, clearly and with clarity, then everything after that will fall into place, because it then becomes easier for people to voice their concerns and their suggestions that can then get taken on board. If they work, then, you know, great. If they don't work, then you will get told why, because it's a transparent and, you know, communicative process. But until you get that, then you're going nowhere. So steps in the right direction, certainly encouraging from, you know, the short spell of being there. And we just need to kind of wait and see. But I would be optimistic, and, you know, I would encourage anybody who's listening who's not a Welsh Society member, get involved, because there is a platform there. It's not a great platform at the moment, but it will improve to actually, you know, have your say and to get things changed. I've got a few ideas still floating about from other people who have sent me messages and my own, and obviously, you know, I'll be drip feeding those to the rest of the board over the couple of months. So it's exciting, if nothing else. You know, we need to get a bash. I'm the MFC podcast representative rather than just myself. So, you know, it's like if anybody wants to get in touch, you know, we're all in it together. And if there's any suggestions or any ideas, I'm more than happy to put those across. But I would first and foremost say that there is a platform to quiz the board. There is a platform to set the agenda. I don't want to, you know, become a conduit for all this kind of information. It still should very much be the Welsh Society that you're getting in touch with first and foremost. But if not, I'm more than happy to take ideas and questions and things like that.
Well, I tell you what, I'm going to march up to Fir Park now and buy a banner and everything else. That was inspiring. Thank you very much for that. Well, delighted to welcome along to finish the podcast. I've called you earlier on in the podcast, Des, the creator of Motherwell Makes Music, a festival coming up this weekend across, is it three venues? Starca, Electric Bar?
Four in total. So, yep, Starca, Jack Daniels, the Electric Bar and Railway Tavern. So four venues in total this year.
Brilliant. An exciting idea. Plenty of young upcoming bands in Motherwell. And the town's always had a reputation, hasn't it, for Lanarkshire as a whole has had a reputation for producing some fantastic bands. This gives guys and bands the platform to continue that.
Exactly. Well, I suppose that's the reason behind it, and that's why we're doing it. We rehearse in obviously for those that might know, I play in a band called The Banter Thieves, and we rehearse in a studio called One Eyed Dog just down near the cathedral in Motherwell. And there's so many great bands that go and rehearse there every week, you know, and you hear them through the wall when you're in one studio and they're in the other, and you think, who are they? And you hardly speak to them, though, because you're in there for 3 hours at a time or whatever. And you're trying to make the most of that 3 hours or whatever, so you don't really get to hear them or you don't really get to speak to them. It seems for me that there's so many bands out there in Motherwell and the surrounding areas that are creating really good noise, but we're not all brought together, so I suppose this is kind of a platform for bands to showcase their talent, but also to kind of create a wee scene in Motherwell and for other bands to support each other, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's it. It'll be good for the venues as well, because I think in recent times anyway, there's been a distinct lack of a Motherwell music venue, hasn't there, and a kind of home of live bands.
Exactly. I mean, when we used to have Starca, where Tony Macaroni's is now, there was an occasional gig upstairs, you know, and used to be quite packed out, and it used to be somewhere that you looked forward to going at weekends if there was bands touring coming along or if there was local bands playing. But since that disappeared, there's not really been anything, and it's trying to fill that hole. I mean, you've got the Electric Bar and Jack Daniels that are kind of pubs that people go to before the football, but they're not dedicated music venues. So suppose if you could have a platform there where bands think that it's a music venue and you can create a bit of a scene about it, maybe bands from elsewhere like Edinburgh, Glasgow, Dundee, wherever, might want to actually come and play Motherwell. And it might give something back to the town.
I suppose there's an obvious tie between football and music. I know your guys are all Motherwell supporters, and you've managed to kind of play a big part in your tie with Motherwell Football Club. Things like Stuart McCall and various others. Keith Lasley being in one of your music videos, playing Keith Lasley's testimonial dinner. So you've had plenty of fantastic events linked to Motherwell. How much do football and music go hand in hand for you?
I think it's a whole culture thing. I think I wouldn't say everybody's into this, but if you're into football, you're usually into music, and there's a lot of bands that are football fans. And I suppose when you grow up, you're either into football and music, or I don't know, you're maybe into rugby and something else. But certainly, I think they go hand in hand, and I think it's a big culture thing. And I think you'll find a lot of people that go along to the football on a Saturday probably listen to the same kind of styles of music as well, and they're into a lot of things, and you'll go to the football on a Saturday afternoon, and then the Saturday night you maybe go along to a gig, or maybe other people will go to, you know, a nightclub and listen to DJs or so. But it's a massive thing, and I think it's important that the football club also help promote the local bands, because there's so many people go along to Fir Park on a Saturday. You're talking 3,000 every week. And if there's bands playing in the town, or if there's bands from the town that support the team, it's always good to get them a bit of exposure, you know, play them at half-time through the turnstiles. And I know Philip Speedy's been great at that since he came in as well.
I suppose the important question is, how do people get along to the Motherwell Makes Music Festival? Are tickets available just now, or do they turn up at the venues on the day?
Either or. The best way to guarantee yourself a ticket is to go online at motherwellmakesmusic.bigcartel.com. And you can get a weekend ticket for all the gigs throughout the weekend for only a tenner. So I think that's 35 bands, roughly, in total. And we've tried to make it as cheap and affordable for people as possible. If you can't make it for the whole weekend, you can turn up and pay on the door. It'll be £6 for each gig. Or alternatively, you can guarantee the tickets by buying a day ticket or a individual venue ticket online as well for £6.
That's fantastic. We'll talk a wee bit about the football, and obviously it will be dedicated to Motherwell Football Club, given we are a Motherwell podcast.
Yep.
First and foremost, you were quite outspoken in Mark McGee and his tenure, his second tenure at Fir Park. I guess the overriding feeling when the axe kind of fell on Mark McGee's tenure was one of relief and possible excitement going forward.
I think relief is probably the right word for it, but it wasn't. I wouldn't say I was happy about it. You know, I mean, when he went, it was the right time for him to go. But I think, as many other Motherwell fans are probably thinking, is what's the next step? You know, where do we go from here? Who do we get in? The list of people that have been suggested haven't been the most exciting, to be perfectly honest. I don't know who I'd expect or who I did expect, but I think I was glad to see him go, but it's just where do we go from here? What's the next step?
Me and Jay talked about it earlier on, the atmosphere and the noticeable dip in the atmosphere as a result of perhaps Mark McGee, perhaps the team not playing so well. Do you think a new manager could actually reinvigorate the fans and perhaps bring back some of that old atmosphere? Motherwell fans were always quite notorious for being negative, and I think that's now polar opposites, actually. Motherwell are renowned and possibly have inspired, through the work of the boys, a lot of other supports to be louder and to be more vocal and be more colourful. I think Motherwell have actually been at the forefront of that, so perhaps that could be maybe the catalyst to just bring a wee bit more, I don't know, just, I avoid using the word oomph, but it's the only word at the tip of my tongue at this moment in time.
You're looking for more positivity, and I mean, you're probably right. I remember going back 10 years or so, Fir Park used to be one of the most negative places in the planet. When something was going wrong, you know, everybody was booing, or you could hear the atmosphere change. And I wouldn't just put it down to the boys, but you know, as you mentioned, I think that what we've done in East End is try to create a bit of a positive atmosphere, and you can see, as you mentioned, there's other clubs looking at Motherwell and trying to replicate that. You've got wee groups of fans at St Johnston coming along with drums now, Hibs, you know, there's loads of people singing similar songs to what Motherwell fans are singing. But I don't think that we've continued to create that positivity in the same way that we should have. And it comes down to a lot of things. Mark McGee, I would say, being a massive factor in that. When he came back the first time, people weren't happy about it. It, in my opinion, wasn't the right decision at the time. Some people will probably disagree with that. The performances on the pitch haven't been great. But I mean, apart from the last few seasons when we finished, you know, second and third, and we were up there, that was us really being spoiled. That's not what Motherwell fans are used to. And bringing in a manager is something that can really, really change that. But it really depends who it is, doesn't it? And if you go down the route of one of these people, like maybe John Hughes or Jim Duffy, or someone that just seems to have been in and around Scottish football but not been too successful, I don't really think that's going to inspire Motherwell fans. I don't think it's going to bring them back in their tens and hundreds, you know.
Another thing I'd like to speak to you about is the introductions of SLOs at Motherwell. That's caused a wee bit of, I don't know, confusion to a certain degree with quite a lot of supporters. We've got Ryan Munt on the podcast next week, and he's going to give us a bit more background to the whole idea.
Sure.
Again, that's something that's going to heavily involve the boys. I don't know whether it'll involve yourself personally, but do you believe this is a forward step in relations between the support and the football club?
Yeah, I definitely think it's a great initiative that, you know, Ryan's trying to bring in, but I think it's very important that you get the right people for the jobs. It wouldn't be something that would interest me. I just don't really think I've got the time for that just now, but I think it's really, really important that they do get the right people in for it. I've read up quite a bit on it previously, you know, about how they do it across Europe. And I think what you really need to do is you need to get people that are recognised in the support and are quite well respected. I don't think it can just be someone, you know, that wants to come along and wear a Motherwell jacket and be in and around the club on a match day. And that's often when you put these positions out to people, that's what you get back. Who the right people would be, probably, in my opinion, people that are recognised, people that are respected and listened to, you know, someone that, there might be the people that you see every away game, but you don't really know their name, you know, but you know that they're a Motherwell fan, you know that they go every week, you know that, you know, if they spoke to you about something, you'd probably listen to them. I think it's definitely a positive step, and it's definitely something that most clubs should be taking on board. I don't want to slight the person because I don't know her, but I've seen recently St Johnston has appointed an SLO, and it's a woman that was essentially just selling lottery tickets at the club, you know, and she gets in on a match day and she does it. And I noticed her on Twitter, and essentially what she was doing is putting out messages saying, you know, don't let off smoke bombs, don't let off smoke flares, you know, you don't do this, don't do that. And for me, whether that's your opinion, and well, it's a completely different argument as to whether pyrotechnics should be allowed in football. I know that my opinion will probably differ for a lot of people that are listening to this podcast. But I think if you're going to begin into this SLO role, you shouldn't be someone that's saying, no, you can't do this, no, you can't do that. I think it needs to be someone that challenges the club. And I think it needs to be someone that challenges the status quo as well, rather than just being a yes man. Because really what you should be there to do is improve spectator experience. And if you look at a lot of these clubs across Scotland, it's a really negative message that they're pushing, and you know, attendances are going down. If you can change it and make it a more positive place to come, then it's definitely a positive move. But I think what the club have done as well, which is really good, is advertise for people across all stands. So what I believe they're doing is there'll be someone from the main stand, there'll be someone from the Cooper stand, there'll be someone from the end section of the east stand, there'll be someone, you know, from the middle of the east stand, and it'll give a fair representation. I think that's quite positive.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more with the whole kind of headmistress type role, where it's just kind of I'm the taskmaster and the rule maker, rather than actually kind of listening and acknowledging the views of the whole support and all demographics within the support.
Exactly. I think that's important. And I mean, you shouldn't, in my opinion, just be pushing the party line. You know, you shouldn't just be saying, this is what the club wants, so we're going to accept that. If there's something that the fans would prefer, you know, and it can come down to some tiny issue like what they're selling at the pie stall, then you should be the voice of the fans for that. You know, you shouldn't just be saying, well, it's not possible. You'd be questioning, why is it not possible and why can we not do it?
So, we're just finishing, as you say, over 30-odd bands playing over the weekend at Muddle Makes Music. Is there a certain one apart from your own that we should be keeping an eye out for? And certainly
Motherwell fans, I'd say check out A Sudden Burst of Colour. Some of you might have heard them a couple of years ago. I think the Welsh Society put together a DVD, and they're an instrumental band, and they're all Welsh fans. And their songs are played over the top of a lot of the Motherwell goals that season, but they're absolutely brilliant, really, really talented guys all for the local area. I'd definitely check them out. Another band that are playing on the Saturday at Jack Daniels alongside ourselves are a band called Dogtooth, and they're absolutely brilliant. They're all around about 16 years old, but the talent and the boys are amazing musicians and really, really going places. From a bit further afield, I'd probably say check out the guys from Bloodlines. They won Best Live Act at the Scottish Alternative Music Awards, so it's a real good addition to the lineup, having them coming out from Fort William, where they're from, to play for us.
Fantastic, mate. I'm looking forward to getting along myself, and I really hope that it goes well, and going forward you can have more of these events and it becomes a yearly thing. All the best.
That's it. That's the plan. Thanks very much, Andrew. Cheers.
No problem. You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye.